you do a phenomenal job. I mean, you really are really listening to what I'm saying, and you're really finding the connections and kind of weaving everything together to really have a more powerful message for your audience. And I'll be honest, you actually helped me learn about myself through this as well. So no, it was a very powerful conversation with you. Thank you.
Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hey, everybody. It's Monday. Thanks for tuning in. Well, you might even be listening on a Wednesday or Saturday. I don't know. But either way, I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for tuning in. Patricia McGinnis has over 20 years of conflict resolution training, speaking, and coaching. She has developed useful techniques that have helped thousands take back control of their disputes. She's compiled her experiences and methods in her book, Change Pain to Gain, The Secrets of Turning Conflict into Opportunity. Immediately after you start reading her book, you will start your own shift in perspective by viewing conflict as the beginning of creative problem solving. I have found the books, the tips, the tools, the steps. They're not only accessible, but they're practical and they're usable. And Patricia has the scholastic aptitude, experience, and expertise needed to help others turn conflict into resolvable opportunity. I've really enjoyed your book. I'm really glad that our paths have crossed.
I am too.
And your insight and understanding, you say, can result from differences in perspective. So her book will show you how to see the other person's perspective and resolve any arising conflict. Conflict, if there's a relationship, there's conflict.
Right.
And in business ownership, you're dealing with a lot of different people in a lot of different areas. And so I think being effective in working through conflict is really critical. And we get a lot of practice, so.
Since there is a lot of it.
It's obvious if we don't know how to deal with conflict well.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
We keep avoiding it, you know, we keep showing up.
Yeah. If it is a critical leadership skill.
Yeah.
It really is.
Right. Yeah. I think, yeah, absolutely a deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In especially growing a business. Well, thank you for participating.
My pleasure.
Yes, and I'm just wondering, let's check in. How are you feeling?
You know, I'm pretty good. I'm very thrilled to be here. It's very, I was appreciative that you invited me to join you on a podcast. It's easy to feel connected to you. You're just very warm and welcoming, and I appreciate that as well. I'm feeling a bit curious about how our conversation will unfold and maybe a little vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this will get personal, I'm sure.
We are right now.
Oh, it's already started, you say. I think important for me is I'm really striving for clarity, so I have the right word choices, so our listeners are clear about what I want to say, and I'm hoping what I say is helpful for them.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh. I'm sure it will be. I'm feeling realistic, grounded, optimistic. I'm also invested. I feel pressure. I was going to get my exercise and my yoga in today, and I didn't, and I feel a little remiss because always before I get on the podcast and we tape, it really helps ground me. in a way that I get the physical tension out of my body.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I'm just going with the flow.
All right.
Very action-oriented.
I did that on an elliptical this morning. So
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Very good.
Ready to move.
How often do you work out?
5 days a week, usually.
Okay. The elliptical?
Well, or treadmill, or with weights, free weights. Or,
all right. At a gym or at home?
No, I'm at home.
Okay. Wow. How do you motivate yourself?
It's become routine, like brushing your teeth.
Oh,
you know?
I see.
I just get up and I do it.
I see. You don't think about it.
Not too hard. Or I'll think of a lot of reasons not to. I would like to do yoga, though. So that would be the next thing that maybe I could add to my repertoire.
Yeah. It's really amazing for aging bodies. You know, I just staying limber and being able to, you know, crouch down or turn or, you know, lift things. I just feel a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And more stable in my feet.
This is good. All right. Yes.
The first thing you lose is balance when you age.
Oh,
so.
I thought it was memory.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's eyesight and, you know, we can go down the list. Oh, I like the way you wrote the book and you talk about growing up in a family of nine.
Yes.
And I think that is good conflict resolution training.
It has to be.
With five girls and two boys.
Yeah.
So you're the oldest of three, or the third oldest?
Third oldest.
Yes. In the middle. Okay.
Well, there's a lot of middle.
Right. There's a big middle there.
Yes.
Several of you must have been in the middle.
My next younger sister believes herself to be the true middle because there's three younger. So she can decide if she wants to be with the big kids or the little kids, you know, depending on what each group is doing.
I see. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in Baudette, but we moved to Prior Lake when I was 3 weeks old. And my dad was going to be the first principal and math teacher at the high school. So we moved to do that. Oh. But as our family grew and salary not enough, we moved to South Minneapolis and he began work in management for Control Data, UNIVAC.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so those principal skills fed into what he needed to do in a different setting. So I grew up mostly in South Minneapolis. It's great. I loved it. I love the city.
Yeah.
I don't live there now, but I love the city.
Yeah. You're a Minnesota native.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Me too.
We always had, since I was 12, we had a cabin, though, like out on Cedar Lake or Prior Lake. So we spent a lot of summers there. So that was... So we had South Minneapolis, but we also had the other kind of life as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, nice. And what were some of the favorite things you liked to do as a child? And is it similar to what you're doing now?
Yeah.
In a different way?
Sort of. Some things, yes. I could lose myself playing with friends in the neighborhood. We had, my younger sister and I had two friends, and we were... Like when we moved in, I was 6, my sister was 3, and then there was a 7-year-old and 8-year-old. So the four of us played together a lot. And we did a lot of creative playing. Like we would make large games on the floor, and we'd be the player pieces. Like we'd make Monopoly big enough for people to move in the parts.
That's so clever.
It was fun. Yeah. But then we had big neighborhood games, too. We played... touch football out in the street, and we played kick the can, and...
Oh, we played kick the can, too.
Yeah, that's not a game you hear anybody talking about now, but that was fun.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
So for anyone who has never played it, you place a can somewhere in the yard or... someplace.
It was in the alley for us.
Okay, in the alley. Okay. Yeah. So tell us how you played it.
Oh, yeah. So you had two teams, and one team is in control of the can, and if anybody... So you try to protect it, And then the other team tries to kick it. And then you start over again. And, you know, I don't remember all the details of it, to tell you the truth. But
yeah,
what do you remember?
Yeah, I remember... that there was usually a small group that would protect the can.
Yeah.
And there would be some that would go out and try to seek people and tag them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so...
No, I forget that part. Okay, yeah.
So there was a group that was hiding, and they would come out and try to kick the can or get somebody off balance. But then the other team can, if they tag you, then you're out.
Mm. Oh, yes, that's right. Okay.
So that, you know, the people protecting the can had some way to, like, you know, get them out of the game.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, it everybody would gang up and then they would get the can too easily.
All right.
So, and once they kicked it, then the game's over.
So a lot of collaboration.
Wins. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Huh?
That's a theme for you.
It really is. And, well, and you know that. Making those games, too, the creative problem solving of that and compromising with each other and how we are going to do things. I mean, there was a lot that happened that is connected to my life now. I never thought of it like that.
Okay.
But there really is. Yeah.
Well, this is part of the learning.
That's right.
I was hoping my job is to help you, you know, help every guest learn something new about themselves that they didn't know.
Yeah.
So if this is it, wow.
Well, that could be something.
We
scored.
That's right.
Yay! So that would be two of the things, that problem solving. You know, that's
sure.
part of conflict resolution. It is.
You
figuring it out.
Yeah, and you start the book out with your sister talking about your sister Mary.
Right.
And
right.
how you had a doll that she wanted to play with, and her idea of negotiation was not negotiating. It was like, I want this doll, and I'm going to, what?
Keep it. Hold it tight, yes.
And get it from you by pinching you or... biting you?
Oh, yeah, she used to bite. Yeah, that was charming. We used to run around the dining room table, and she'd be crying because she couldn't catch me to bite me.
And what was your mom's thinking?
Well,
in resolving the...
Well, she just stopped it and asked, Mary, what are you going to do with this doll? She said, I just wanted to put it in the cradle so... my sister and I could go out and play. You know, it's just so basic, but we make assumptions and we're afraid of what the other person is thinking or going to do without even asking.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
So your mother taught you the first lesson in conflict resolution was to listen.
Mediator mama.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So how did your life then continue? Were you in sports or writing or poetry, society groups?
No.
What kinds of things were you up to in high school?
High school, volleyball.
Oh, okay.
Could play volleyball. I did photography, an actual dark room. That was kind of fun. I was on the paper, actually.
School
I guess
paper.
I did do a little writing and some good training about writing headlines and, you know, there's supposed to be a verb in them and things like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I did those kinds of things in high school.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And where did you end up moving on from there?
The University of Minnesota. Not all of my siblings. Most of us went there. One went to St. Kate's, the oldest, and the second to the youngest went to St. Thomas. But in between, we went to the U.
I see.
And that was good. I loved being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you major in?
Education.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get a degree in teaching?
I did. Elementary, kindergarten endorsement, and at that time it was called early childhood certification. So that, the teaching is kind of surprising that I was teaching young children, and then as my career evolved, it was teaching adults. So
yeah.
Not something I expected when I started, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you get married along the way, or?
Well, I did. 1974 was a very big year.
Okay.
Graduated from college, got married, got my first job and our first house.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was big. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I've been married a very long time to a very fine, intelligent, strong, kind man.
Oh, yeah. It's good to hear.
And and being at the U was quite a growing opportunity. You know, you just feel so big.
Yeah.
When you're on that great big campus coming from maybe my senior class was 250.
Okay.
You know, and so there you are with 40,000 other students, you know.
Yeah.
I just remember walking on that campus and just feeling like, man, I have made it. I felt so adult and like I could conquer the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good feeling to go there.
Yeah.
And it was, there's so much opportunity in college. I hope students appreciate it these days, you know. Even in the College of Liberal Arts, there's so much to learn. It was hard to choose because it's one of my mantras is I love to learn. And so the first couple of years, you know, exploring the sciences and arts and math and all kinds of things. And then the focus on education, you know, it's a whole different connection when you get to into your field and learn so much from the professors that you get to know so much better. So
I
loved that connection.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you end up teaching then for a while?
I did for a long while. My first job was starting a preschool and a kindergarten at a private school, and they never had either of those. And I did that for a few years until my first child. And then while that baby was until a year old, I designed a early childhood program and started that and had that running for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So really, really this entrepreneurial spirit started right after college.
Yeah. You
know, the startup kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I was working for someone or not, that I always like to do new things.
Okay, yeah.
Start new things.
Right, and you saw an opportunity that, you know, with your own personal life that you wanted to work and raise your daughter, son?
Daughters, yeah.
And how many kids do you have?
Three daughters,
mm-hmm. Okay. All right, and then, well, so you did that for 20 years?
Yeah. And at the same time, I had another couple jobs. One was director of early childhood family education program in a school district where parents and birth to 5-year-olds come and you have, do you know of this? ECFE?
Yeah, early childhood, family education.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we took so much advantage of that.
Yeah,
and the daddy and me classes.
Right.
And then we did water babies, but that wasn't associated with ECFE.
No.
And then, Olivia walked in her first ECFE class.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Her
that
first
was memorable.
Step. Yeah, yeah, it was. And the teachers were so excited. Yeah.
So, and then after that, I was a director of a family services collaborative.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
You may not know what those are, but it's city, county, and school district working together. And in our situation, it was, so families, it was kind of a one-stop shop. You know, there are a lot of different services that they could get in one location. And so while I was there, I got trained in family group conferencing, which is a court diversion program at that time for first-time offenders.
Okay.
And so the person who did some kind of harm and the person who was harmed come together, and the student's parents or support people are with him or her. And the student figures out the impact of their action on the other person. And part of our work then is to figure out, so what happens next? How do you make that person whole again, the person that was harmed. For instance, if it was a, maybe there's graffiti on a garage door, well, then the student would repaint the garage.
Oh, you know, natural, natural consequences. Excellent.
What I was so impressed with is the kindness and the caring of the one that was harmed to want this child to turn their lives around. Well, maybe not child, maybe young adult. and to work closely with the parent. I mean, there's so much empathy that went back and forth between the adults besides caring about this student. The process just amazed me. And it went from a small thing like that to one where we had four students that were harmed. I have to remember right now, it was quite a while ago. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there were some 90 people in the circle because there was a crowd of students that jumped a few others, and there was a lot of injuries in hospital, and it was a very difficult process. But once again, I mean, you do a lot of preparation. You talk to every single person that's going to be in that circle beforehand, and so they understand what it's about and how it will unfold. So,
you mean when there's the reconciliation part?
Right.
Oh, I see.
Well, and talking about what happened, why it happened, what were people thinking and feeling at the time, you know, really exploring pretty deeply what was going on for everyone in the situation. Yeah. And the fear and the sadness that people experienced, you know, parents and siblings, and, you know, it was a really tough one.
Yeah.
Because of just seeing such strength in people to be able to manage something very difficult, my sister is a family law attorney and mediator, and thought, if you like that process, you would like mediation. And so this is kind of where it came from. So I got trained in mediation.
And it started with kids?
It started with parents, adults, divorce. Divorce. Although my goal was...
I mean, your prior training helped prepare you to shift into this new arena.
Right, yeah. Right. So I was working with adults. But my goal, you know, mediator is neutral, or supposed to be. But I didn't feel so neutral about the children that are caught in the middle of a divorce. And I really wanted the adults to think about how they were affecting their children. So we worked hard to keep the children out of the middle. And I had a male.
So is that when you started your business?
That was one business, Turning Point Mediation.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you get special training for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. So right after I got the training, I thought, well, now I could be a mediator for the special ed mediation program because I know education. My early childhood program had children with special needs as an inclusion site. Sure. As it was called then. And so, I mean, I was ready.
Yeah.
I got my training, and I'm ready. Well, not so much. She said, you got to be really experienced and have had some, you know, done a lot more mediation than what you've done so far to do this job because it is very challenging. So I set about getting my experience by starting that business. I had a male attorney. So the two of us did it together. So we presented a gender-balanced team for a divorcing couple, and it worked really well. So then about 3 years later, the job of running the program was open. Mm. So that's what I did.
Okay.
That's what I did. So I work with the mediators and the parties, both the parents and the educators, to come together. So, yeah, so that was 15 years of my work in conflict resolution.
Yeah. Okay. Terrific. Well, we are at the end of our first conversation.
We are.
Yes.
That went quickly.
It seems to always go so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking that maybe what we could do is do one of the exercises in your book that our listeners could participate in.
Sure.
Okay. So your book is outlined with kind of 8 secrets to conflict resolution, and you approach the conflict from several different perspectives. So, for example, in chapter 1, secret number 1.
Yes.
conflict does not need to be feared. So you lay out a really nice foundation of how to think of conflict as like neutral or an intersection of differences, which also helps with kind of creating some space to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you mention is conflicts can be a very good thing if it's seen as an alert to differences.
Mm-hmm.
What is an exercise that you have in the appendix?
Well, there's one about how you develop your attitude about conflict and how you use that attitude to resolve conflict. And it's kind of a circular process. Either it will...
So can I put the circle in the show notes for them to see?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would work.
All right.
So depending on the outcome, that will say whether you want to keep the way you manage conflict or maybe you need to change strategies.
Okay.
So you want to work through that?
We just need to give them an exercise. I want to give them some homework. So the exercise that we're going to do for the listeners is called Let Your Values Be Your Compass. So it's called the Conflict Cycle Reflection. So what you do is you write down your beliefs and attitudes about conflict that you developed as a child. So I will put this in the show notes.
Okay.
And then people will see that there's one arrow that moves you then to an example of a conflict. Maybe we could go through the exercise. So what might be the belief that one might have or the attitude that they've developed as a child?
For me, one was that it's possible to resolve conflict and not get all heated and get over it. I watched my parents have loud, loud arguments. We're at the dinner table. There's, you know, 4 kids on one side, 3 on the other, parent on either end. And they're shouting back and forth, and it's like a tennis match watching them.
I can see your head bobbing back and forth. Yeah.
And then one of them will say, all right, that's the way we'll do it. And then my mom would say to my dad, so do you want a cup of coffee, Jim? You know, it was over.
That was it.
It was over.
Yeah.
You didn't have to hold grudges. You could resolve it. It got a little loud. It's okay to have...
So everybody aired their opinions?
The two of them.
The two of them.
We weren't part of it.
I see.
We just witnessed it.
I see.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's one thing that I learned as a child. Is you can resolve it. It's okay if it gets loud. And you can get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to hold grudges about it.
And what did you do when conflict came up then?
Well, an example of now is, or more recently, like when I wrote my book, I had this image of what my book was going to look like when it was published.
Yeah.
And it was going to have these colorful images, and they were, you know, I was very happy with what I found to put into it and sent it to the publisher, all these beautiful images, and said, which one goes to what? And the first draft came back to me in black and white. And I have to say my first reaction was anger and frustration and
yeah,
they get it. And
yeah,
but my second was the curiosity. It was, I wonder if there was a misunderstanding, or what is it about the black and white that they think is better? And so we talked, and I asked them to show it to me both ways. It was an economic reason. It was a practical reason. And by the end, I actually liked it better. I liked the black and white better. It seemed more professional. I didn't write a picture book.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd want colorful, beautiful pictures in a picture book.
I see.
But that's not what this is.
Yeah.
And so by remaining curious and being willing to listen and try to understand the other person's perspective.
And how they came about their decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to say, they surely were very patient with me because it was, I mean, I'd never done it before.
Right.
I didn't know how this was all going to unfold. So in that way, I used what I knew about conflict. But, you know, your first reaction can often be emotional.
Yeah,
you just
absolutely.
Can't help that.
Oh,
you
no
can't
kidding.
Help it.
Yeah.
But then that's the alert.
Right.
Along with seeing we have some differences here. Let's figure out why.
So in this exercise, then you would write out an outcome. So you have you write down what your beliefs are or attitude was about conflict that was developed as a child.
Right.
And then, like you had an example with your book of when you had some conflict that you needed to address.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I do when conflict occurs, you kind of outlined how you responded.
Right.
And then the shift came with the outcome because you became curious and you wanted to find out what their reasoning was behind the decision of the exercises, doing them black and white in your book. And you realized, oh, I'm actually in agreement with them.
Well, yes, yes. So the conflict got resolved.
Right.
If your outcome is that it did not, and there's more anger, more frustration, damaged relationships, then how you handled it, you may want to change your belief about how conflict should be managed and try something else next time and see if that circle, because that circle is self-perpetuating and can be positive or negative.
Yeah.
Depends on what the outcome is. So for me, I mean, I can't get rid of that emotion that I had, but the curiosity worked.
Yeah.
And the asking questions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, thank you for the exercise. We've got a big, nice takeaway then for our listeners.
Yes. Good.
Along with understanding how the work that you've done, how it evolved over time, and how it's been very useful for you in to learn how to manage conflict throughout your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's both personal and professional.
Yes, right.
Skill that you need.
Great.
Right.
All right. Well, tune in next week because we're going to go over in a little bit more depth some of the other secrets that she has in her 8 secret book about how to change pain to gain, the secrets of turning conflict into opportunity. Thanks for tuning in this week. Hope you have a great, awesome Monday. And remember, you can call me and we can talk about any conflict that you would like to resolve in your life. If you want to change your pattern, give me a call and I'll sort through it with you. I'll give you a 20-minute free session, 612-804-8920. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, videographer, mon frère. Thanks again, Patricia.
Yes.
And thanks for everybody tuning in. Bye.